We have a love-hate relationship with Chicago because, well, I hate it and I left, but I can't leave it because I love it. I can't stop thinking about it. I was born there, and even though I'm gone now, in Green Acres, Indiana, I still think about the city that I love. But an amazing thing happened. Brandon Johnson, just days ago, was asking the major vendors of the city, people who provide everything from toilet paper to lumber to asphalt, to kick back 3% on invoices that are sent to City Hall to help Chicago get through its so-called budget crisis. Now, I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe if you ask the guy who sells toilet paper to the city to give 3%, he might, but go see if you can ask the asphalt guys, hey, give me 3% back. I want that contract. You think that's going to work? I don't think so. The city has fallen apart, but you know who is in the middle of it besides the people? The cops, the firefighters, the people who are not getting paid. And that's why we want to have Gene Roy, former chief of detectives, Chicago Police Department, as our guest today on the Chicago Way. He knows what happened to the criminal justice system. He knows what happened to Chicago, the city that we love and the city that we hate. He knows what happened to Tim Evans, to Tony Preckwink, to all the people who are in charge of the criminal justice system, who elect the state's attorneys and so forth. Jeff Carlin is here as always. Loyal friend, WGN producer, future physics teacher. I'm John Cass, editor-in-chief of John Cass News. And where are you as we're talking about this, as the city falls apart, as Brandon Johnson is asking for 3% kickbacks on what people have sold the city, and the street lights are out and the potholes and alleys are swallowing your car? You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way, that's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
And as promised, the aforementioned former chief of detectives, Chicago Police Department, Gene Roy. Welcome, Gene.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me. Good to be here with you.
So tell me about what's going on with you now. I saw you're keeping up with the crime news by retweeting a CNWB story about this idiot who was robbing gamblers coming off the shuttle bus from the casino. And I was just wondering, how stupid do you have to be a criminal and stand right near or park right near the place where the
casino
bus is dismarking? Yeah, disembarking. What is going on?
There's a reason they're criminals. They can't make it in the real world of business and academia.
Exactly.
Go back to my time in the 21st district and the 9th district, which covered Chinatown. And when the casinos started back around, 2000, it was an epidemic of that, and finally we just did what we had to do, put the cops on the dots, as we say, and put an end to it, But apparently this guy hasn't learned the lessons from his father or his grandfathers or his uncles. And he came and did the same thing. I mean, it's you know, thank goodness that the city, that the police have access to the technology. They were able, they saw what was going on. They stopped him. They checked his activity on in real time on a video camera and saw what had happened, put two and two together, get the victim. The victim identifies him, and here's a robber off the street. It shows a couple things. You know, first of all, the technology is crucial. And number two, as I put in that article that I wrote, traffic stops, traffic enforcement does have a place in Chicago with the Chicago Police Department and the city of Chicago. It's an essential tool to combat crime and violence.
I'm surprised that criminals don't try to knock off a card game in Norwich. Why don't they do that?
How you doing?
Or Oak Lawn. Hey,
who's asking, Jeff, John?
Well, I'm just wondering. You know, there's cash there. Why don't you go and see what you can do over there? Get some cash there. Is that easy? I think it's easier to hit a little Chinese guy when he's getting off the bus than hit. Go, let's go up to Norwich.
Soft targets, John. Soft targets.
I don't think those targets are soft, the ones that I'm talking
about. Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Well, the ones you're talking about are definitely not soft targets. And there's a heavy bill to be paid once you're identified as having done that.
Yeah, I know, right? This is very, very, very how you doing. But Jane, thanks for joining us. I mean, a little bit of those who don't know us, give us your backstory. Give us your, you know, I always joke you're bona fides, say. But tell us a little bit about yourself.
Grew up on the south side of Chicago, around 88th and Cottage. Catholic, you know, as everybody was back in Chicago, except for the small Greek contingent out west.
He was born in St. Connie's Parish, and he stayed Catholic. I can't believe that. Okay, go on.
And so grew up there. And, you know, people ask me, why did you become a cop? What motivated you to become a cop? Where I lived three blocks away from the church and the church where I was baptized in. I went to a public school, 91st and Cottage. We did kindergarten there. First grade at St. Joachim's, where I was baptized. And a block north of, like around 90th and Cottage, there's a small family-owned restaurant called Iola's, and an Italian, owned by an Italian family. And it was right across the street from the old Burnside station, before it was Area 2. And when you have a restaurant across the street from a police station, what do you have? You have cops in there all the time. And, you know, we'd walk to church on Sunday, and the treat was we would stop and have breakfast, Sunday breakfast after Mass at Iola's, around all these cops and firemen, the city workers, you know, and just impressed me. That's something I always wanted to be. I always wanted to do. And, you know,
was Dad on the job?
No, I'm the first one.
Oh,
I'm the first one. Actually, you know, my grandparents are both in the service industry. My grandfather was a railroad trainman. My grandmother was she was at the forefront of women's lib movement. She was a sales clerk at the Weebolts at 63rd and Halsted, and she was actually an officer of their union and was really big in that back in the 60s, before it was the early 60s, before it was heard of.
Yeah.
My father was a freelance reporter.
Really?
And my mother was a lab technician at a doctor's office. I just wanted to be the police. I was so impressed by them. It's something I want to do when I grow up.
What do you think kids think about the police department now?
It depends on where you're at, what neighborhood. You know, I'm out in Beverly. You know, people still have a great view of the police. You know, now if you're, you know, in DePaul or someplace else along the lakefront, you know, the kids aren't going to have such a great view of the police. Or, you know, this far south side and east side, they're not going to have a great view of the police.
I don't know what it is. I always think of the police as German Shepherd. Like the German Shepherd dog is instinctually a protector. And I think that there are many American kids, boys, girls, who want to protect people, want to do the right thing, no matter where they grew up. And that feeling gets beaten out of them by the culture, by the political culture.
Exactly. You nailed it.
So how has it changed? I mean, since you started, I mean, obviously we've seen it in, you know, from a media perspective and the idea that, you know, cops all have body cams now. And that seems to be really a powerful tool going both ways, you know, trying to keep people safe and keep people, in my view, you know, honest. What has changed and what do you think the future should be of policing in a city like Chicago?
Well, first of all, I'm going to start off at the 30 or 50,000 foot level. When I came on the police department, I first got involved in law enforcement back in the early 80s. The department was a home for veterans, the blue-collar bungalow guys who weren't going on to college, who weren't going to go be doctors or lawyers, but could still serve their community and make a decent buck while they're at it. Back then, leadership, management, heavy on the military style. You know, I came on, some of my partners were Vietnam vets, had a sergeant who actually an old timer just hanging on, and he had actually walked across Korea. So you had that semi-military philosophy with the rank structure and sure. And the way things were done. And, you know, officer wellness, this is your job, kid, suck it up.
Yeah, right.
Embrace the suck.
You know, there was nothing like that. And then also, you know, Jeff raised the point about the body cameras. The technology wasn't there. It just wasn't there. We were lucky that we had the walkie-talkie radio.
Sure. What do you think has changed as far as – because, see, I've always seen, like, you know, the cops, when I grew up as a kid, it was like kind of what John was talking to. The idea that a German Shepherd there to say, hey, you know, if you do something wrong, these guys are the ones who could come find you and make you pay the price for it. And that was my view. Now we've got this weird, you know, worldview that cops are supposed to be, you know, these, you know, soft, you know, embraceful, you know, therapist kind of thing. There's this whole bigger world that we put on their plate to try to do. And it's true of like teachers. I mean, there's a lot of things, people you can talk who've been pushed and their role has been changed. How has it changed from your, yeah, that's my idea. Like how you've seen it. I mean, you've been there, you're not long retired. How has it come in and how has it impacted the job?
It, again, like I said, going back to my earlier point, it was still a semi-military organization.
Sure.
It was a semi-military rank structure, and it was a semi-military, more like a full military. Mm-hmm. This is it. Do your job. Keep your mouth shut. Go along. You know, and it progressed over time. But I saw it changed rapidly right around the late 80s. Mm-hmm. I saw the change, and people are starting to wake up to the thing is you can't be the rude occupying soldier all the time and expect people to get along with you. You can't be that forceful, dominant figure all the time. There's times it's needed, but you can't treat Joe and Jane Bungalow like that or Joe and Jane DePaulian like that. You have to adapt to the culture where you're at. You have to be able to read the room. And we weren't being given that. We weren't allowed to think like that. Everything was straight and narrow. First example I saw of it, I went to work in the 11th District on the TAC team for Chuck Ramsey. You know, Chuck was being the deputy superintendent. He got passed over for superintendent here. He went and became the superintendent of the Washington, D.C. Police Department. And from there, he moved down to Philadelphia. But he was a guy who was ahead of his time. And this is a story I share with everybody. I was going to be on the TAC team, you know, in the plain clothes, the unmarked car, the blue jean police, you know, run and gun. And so we're talking, we have this interview. He interviews me. Well, why do you want to? And the question he asks, why do you want to be on the TAC team? Why this instead of a B car? And I came up with the standard answer of the time. You know, hey, I want to go and arrest people with guns. I want to arrest the dope dealers. That's why I do it.
Serve and protect. Right, exactly.
Serve and protect. And he said, let's rephrase that a little bit. He said, I agree with all that. But that's not the primary reason you're here. The primary reason a good cop is here. You have an aunt, you have a grandma, you have a mom. Do you want them getting knocked down, getting their purse snatched, you know, getting robbed while they're on the bus going to work or coming home at night? You're there for those people. Never lose sight of that. That is your constituency, in so many words. The other stuff comes second. If you take care of doing the right thing to take care of those people who need to be protected from the vultures, you're going to be a hell of a cop.
The old woman walking home from the store.
Yes.
With her shopping bag. I know that woman. I know what happened to her because she was my great aunt. She broke her hip. She was 80 years old. She broke her hip. She never, you know, in the newspapers, you write the story, woman in the hospital or she's released, and that's called a C item, a little square paragraph. But it's not the end of the story because you're 80 years old or that, in that age, and you're perfect victimhood for these thugs. And they see you and they know they're not going to get hurt because that's why they attack. Because they're like hyenas. They don't want to get hurt. They don't want to break a jaw. So they attack her and her hip is broken and she can't live her life. And then she's afraid and she begins to decline. That's what happened so many times in this city. Agreed?
Exactly. Agreed. And, you know, going back to that, she lost years off of her life. I'll bet you she died. You know, we can never know.
Yeah, right.
But she probably died before her time. Mm-hmm. If that hadn't happened to her, she would have had a better quality of life and a longer life. That broken hip is ultimately fatal in people that age.
63rd and Justine. I'll never forget it because, you know, I know her. I knew her. Mm-hmm. But so many people like that, Jeff, like, and now here's me, Roy. I'm, what, pushing 70? And, you know, okay, I lost a little bit of weight, but I'm not going to go 15 rounds. I can't even go 4 rounds. I walk with a cane. So I'm walking with a cane, but the difference is I got something in my pocket, but not everybody has something in their pocket. They don't want to hurt anybody.
Right.
So what do you do about that? What do you do of a society where people are terrified and frightened to the point where they want to hurt people? They carry guns for that purpose.
You know, it comes down to a lot of things. You can't just press one button and make this all go away. This is a problem that's been brewing for years.
Yes.
We have an ineffective criminal justice system. Hopefully that's starting to turn around, but we've suffered through 8 years of the criminal is right, the cop is wrong.
Right.
That's like trying to bring the Queen Mary in the dock in New York Harbor. It's right. You don't do it real easy. That takes a lot of work and a lot of time. We have to change that. We have to change people's attitudes towards the police. The police are not heavy-handed henchmen. They're here to protect. You know, we've all got dads, moms, sisters, brothers, families. We get that. Are there some goofs out there that probably shouldn't be wearing a uniform? Absolutely. I'm not going to deny that. But for the most part, 95% of your cops are out there because they want to be cops. They want to do those things. They want to protect Grandma and Aunt Sally. We have to get this criminal justice system back under control. You know.
Speak to that. What is that? You mean you say it's ineffective. You obviously have there's something there. And John and I have talked about this on our own. But what's it from your perspective?
This silly thing about, you know, the silly progressive laws that have been passed. They're not silly. Mm-hmm. They're actually tragic. Mm-hmm. Somebody can't be detained after being arrested for a violent felony because mm-hmm. nobody's dead.
So the Safety Act, right?
It's crazy. There was an example. You go out to one of the western counties, the collar counties. There was an incident where a truck driver, intoxicated, rear-ended a marked sheriff's car, mm-hmm. killed the sheriff's deputy. Turns out that he's not authorized to be in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. And he's an obvious flight risk. He's charged with involuntary manslaughter. And the judge said, I can't detain him.
Sure.
The law won't let me detain him. He can't sit in jail pending trial.
A lot of this happened to Cook County. I blame the white chicks. That's my irrational blame. I blame the angry Marxist white chicks who are part teacher, part social activist. But they basically elected Kim Fox, along with their champion, their hero, George Soros, who elected prosecutors like Kim Fox all over the country. Exactly. And they stopped enforcing the law. Killers and predators, and the type of predators I'm talking about that you spent your career chasing, are not afraid of that type of prosecutor. And so they congregate, and they breed and they grow.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens to the society that breeds them? It falls apart. Yeah?
Exactly. It does fall apart. But, you know, the people that are pulling the strings behind this, orchestrating this radical change in our society, it doesn't matter to them. They're not living in houses that are going to be burglarized. They don't have to worry about their car being missing when they come out of having dinner at a, you know, Fulton, West Fulton dinner. You know, that they're being chauffeured around.
Let's go to the West Side, honey.
The fortresses.
Let's go to the West Side for dinner, hon. Isn't that nice? Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm thinking, oh, my God. Yeah, right. But go on. Enjoy yourselves. Hope the bread was good. But that's what happens. Their cars go on. They get carjacked. Right, Jeff?
Oh, I mean, it's the breaking thing is legit. I mean, I live in, you know, the North Side. And Edgewater's, I mean, it's yeah, there's been around me, I can think of probably 24 stores that have been broken into at least once in the past year. I can drag up probably 24 Facebook posts in the last year of people in the Edgewater area who've had their homes broken into. And it's a lot of the same people in the pictures. And it's that this whole, you know, safety act that says the, you know, the perpetrator is innocent until caught 100 times and found guilty. It's crazy, and it's that police system. I mean, it says, Gene, I mean, you know this better than any of us. You've got the guys who work the cases and stuff. What is it specifically? I mean, what do we need to change? But from my perspective, it's always the idea of this, you know, hey, I'm caught with a gun. I'm doing breaking into someone's house. But, hey, I'm 19, my first offense, and we're going to plea it down to trespassing. You know, that's the thing. It happens.
You know, there's always got to be room for discretion. I mean, out of 100 cases, there's always going to be that 5% where the borderline or the complainant, the victim, isn't quite legit. So you have to have room for that. But those other 95 have to be held accountable. It's that simple. They have to be held accountable. And until they're held accountable, you know, and have respect for the criminal justice system, I don't use the word fear because they really don't fear anything. But they need to have respect. You know, they know that if they tangle with another gang, that it's not going to end well. They need to have that same level of respect for 26th in California and the judiciary system, that if they do the wrong thing and they're wrong, they're going to pay for it. But they don't.
But you have a chief judge. I remember this was, what, 2 years ago, Jeff? 3 years ago? There was a little girl holding her mommy's hand on 26th Street. And the 2-6s and the Latin Kings do what they do in the middle of the street, and this little girl gets hit in the head, catches a round in the head. She's dead. And then the chief judge, Tim Evans, then the chief judge. Is he still the chief judge? I think so, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He goes on. I'm at the Union League Club or one of those places.
Right.
And he starts talking about how the offender, his brain hasn't, he's like 18 years old and his brain hasn't developed. And he doesn't know right from wrong. And we should have compassion for them. And I'm thinking,
what do we do if we give him a chance and he goes out and hijacks a car? Do we throw him away? No, we don't give up on the kids. We continue to try to help them.
I've known him since he was a little alderman picking up, how can I say this?
Please do.
Picking up personal injury cases from Eddie Verdoliak, okay, when he was an alderman. And I'm thinking, what the hell is he talking about? But that's your chief judge. And he still gets reelected. And the person who put him in that spot, Tony Preckwinkle, keeps getting reelected. What am I supposed to do with these people, Gene?
I wish I had an answer for you. I think that, you know, I've written in a couple of posts that, you know, what Chicago needs is, I use a medical analogy. We need a team of the best surgeons there are, political surgeons that there are, who the city is in critical condition financially, spiritually, criminally. It's in critical condition. You know, when you, if you had somebody who's shot, you don't take them to the local hospital at Addison and Central. You take them to surgery. You take them to Illinois Masonic. These are places where, you know, the military, doctors from around the world come to work on trauma cases. We need, and you, building on that analogy, a team who have common sense and good judgment and realize that there's spiritual problems, there's criminal problems, there's financial problems. Put together a team, and instead of just accepting it and saying, oh, well, you know, the Democratic Party is so strong, you know, we can't accept it anymore. Can't accept it. And I wanted to tell you, go back, talk about Tim Evans for a minute here.
Yeah.
I don't know if you just saw recently where the Cook County Sheriff's Office, which was running the electronic monitoring program for anybody held or detained at Cook County Jail pending a court case, is going to be transferred to Evans' office with the probation.
Kevin, God help them.
Who has been doing some of them too? There was a split there. They were the sheriff's office has some cases and versus the Evans' office, right? Already,
yeah. So, but here's the thing, you know, and as a journalist and as an investigative journalist. You know, Tim Evans is a judge. You can't FOIA Tim Evans. Tim Evans and the operations of this unit are immune from FOIA. So you can't even put in a FOIA to say how many people are escaped, how many people this, how many people that. How is anybody going to know the truth?
Well, I guess we can wait for some columnist at the Chicago Tribune to find out because they'll push it, right? How dare you? We want to know. The people have the right to know.
You're living in the past.
Yeah, I definitely. I should be living in 1890. Is where I should be. My grandfather came over.
I want to go back and point out. You know, we talk about electronic monitoring. Two terrible tragedies that happened in Chicago. One was just before the Democratic convention. There was an offender who there was a I think it was a 6 or 7 year old kid who was out playing in the area of Jackson and Oakley.
Mm-hmm.
Here's some kid walking around who's on electronic monitoring. Turns out he was in violation. He broke his electronic monitoring. He's walking around with a semi-automatic rifle. He cranks off a few, and he hits this, I think, six-year-old kid.
Baby.
You know, the officers from 12 right on the scene. The fire department was really jammed up that day. The ambulance, they weren't getting an ambulance there immediately. The ambulance was tied up on another call. These officers scooped up this little kid, carried him into, they were only four blocks away from Stroger, got in the car, drove him right there, talking to the kid all the way there, trying to keep him motivated, keep him conscious, keep him going. And it wasn't any good. The kid died, you know, in the ER. Just terrible. And these cops, they'll carry that with them for the rest of their lives. But as it comes out, the offender was on electronic monitoring. The juvenile probation department, which administers the EM system, the electronic monitoring system for the juvenile court, knew about that and didn't take any action to scoop him up or revoke or modify the terms of his, you know, electronic monitoring.
Because there's not enough sheriff's deputies or cops to do that work.
Oh, see, there's a difference. There's a very subtle difference there. The electronic monitoring for juveniles is done by probation officers that work for the juvenile court system. They report to Tim Evans. You're not taking sheriff's deputies. You're not taking cops to monitor that. It's all a Tim Evans operation. Another one, even more tragic, friend of mine, a fellow co-worker. Back in the day, Larry Newman, Vietnam War hero, Marine, becomes a Chicago police officer when he gets back, survives Vietnam, gets back, becomes a bomb technician, first African-American bomb technician in the history of the Chicago Police Department. Right. After he retires, he works for TSA out at the airport. He's nationally known. He lives on the west side around Madison and Costner. He's out one day working on his lawn. There's somebody else there. Two kids come up and approach him. Hey, this is a stick-up, dude. They kill him. Try and stick him up. You know, he resists. They kill him.
Right.
They were both out on EM, and one had violated the terms of the EM. There was no effort to corral him, bring him back. Those are two preventable murders.
Gene, I got to ask you. One thing that I've always thought is, it was, you know, let's start with the basics. If we're going to fix things, we're going to, you know, take violent people off the streets and keep them from making people like our aunt and, you know, ourselves scared. It starts with guns. I mean, how many of these kids are every guy I see who's out and about who is doing something iffy has got a gun on him, right? So if you are even accused of a crime with a gun, it should be an instantaneous, sorry, you know, you're off the streets for a year, whatever it is. Why isn't that happening? Why isn't the gun the thing that changes everything? That, because all these guys have guns. I mean, they know they have to have guns.
Because who carries them? Who carries the guns?
All of these guys are carrying guns. I mean, they all are.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, the problem is the climate of 26th Street. There's two ways gun violators can be prosecuted. They can be prosecuted locally, or they can be prosecuted federally. Being prosecuted locally, first-time offender, nothing's going to happen.
Why? The way
it's going to happen for them is probation.
How do we change that?
Misguided youth. It's the political climate.
Okay.
Now, it used to be that the feds were death on gun crimes. As a matter of fact, when I was a district commander, participated in a program with the feds and the probation department, every parolee or probationer for a gun crime in Cook County had to go to a meeting. And there was a bunch of U.S. attorneys, there's a bunch of prosecutors and top-notch guys from 26th Street, and then people like myself and other commanders. And it was like, hey, look, you got out, you're a convicted felon, you can't be screwing around with guns anymore. If you are, Roy's going to tell you what's going to happen to you. You're tagged. You're marked. You're a convicted felon. Everybody who works for him knows who you are, where you live, what you drive, yada, yada, yada.
Right. Okay,
you go over to the 26th Street guy. And, you know, hey, we're going to come after you. And then the big stick in the room was the federal attorney, was the U.S. attorney's people. If you get caught with a gun as a convicted felon, and here's the criteria, you're going to jail and you're going to get a minimum of 10 years and you're going to Yankton, South Dakota or Rochester, right, Minnesota or Terminal Island, L.A. or wherever, your family's going to cost your family $1,000 to come and see you. You know, you don't want to be doing this. You don't want to put yourself in that position. There were studies. It was effective. But then the political climate changed and, you know, hey, you got caught with a gun. Ain't no big thing.
Right. I mean, so who's saying that? Who are the people who are we saying? Because we got to change. I mean, we got to start there. That's this inflection point, because it's not like guns are just a thing that kids have on them. Like, oh, he's got a gun. It's his first time. Guns are the problem that are causing death in this city. Full stop. So how do we get it out of these hands of kids who shouldn't have guns? And how do we say, if you have a gun, you're going to jail and we stop you. We pull you over for, you know, speeding and you have a gun on you. Guess what? Is it registered? No. Are you legally have this? No. Then you're going to jail. Like, how do we make that happen?
Well, a couple things. Let's cops can be out there and pull over everybody tomorrow.
Sure. Guns. That's what I want.
But if we don't have the prosecutors locked down on the same page, yes, we're prosecuting people. Hey, look, here's a criteria. If you get a first time 17-year-old or something like that, okay, we may give him, he's probation eligible, but here's the other criteria. And these people are going to do hard time, or we're going to ask for hard time. Don't forget the judiciary's another wild card in this.
Right, sure.
We have to have that ability. So the court has to be set up to the court and the criminal justice system, including the prosecutors, has to be set up that they will support the police when they make these arrests. Now, we are faced with a climate where the police department, you know, the political structure, the political class is saying traffic stops – traffic enforcement is racist. It's discriminatory. It's oppressive. So our answer, well, what's your answer to traffic safety? You know, people are, there's the number of traffic accidents in minority neighborhoods is just astounding. Now, what's your cure for this? What's your solution? We're going to put up more speed cameras. You know, the system is totally out of whack. Sure. There needs to be somebody with common sense and good judgment. Hey, there's a time and a place for speed cameras. There's a time and a place for effective law enforcement, you know, constitutionally appropriate stops. We have to get back to that point.
You're not going to get there until you isolate, target the law firms that are making millions upon millions of dollars in this county, paying off the Democrats. You know who they are. I know who they are. If you follow criminal stories, you know who they are. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who are leading the charge always against the police officers. They're filing suit. You know, there's a woman, I would want to use the language, but I have to watch myself. She's in the middle of a rock-throwing, frozen beer, frozen bottle-throwing protest in front of Columbus. And I don't even know where's the statue? Where's the statue? Is it still gone?
Yeah, that's a good question. What's hidden?
Somebody grabs her and she gets her tooth knocked out and she sues the city, and the city council in its wisdom grant her $280,000 for her tooth. And she was resisting arrest, but we can't mention that. And why are we paying this? That's the attitude that's destroying the city, that we're paying this.
Yeah, a couple things. You know, first of all, I know the sergeant who was hit by that bottle. He had a fractured eye socket. He had some serious, life-altering injuries. You know, and $280,000 for a broken tooth? Come on, let's get real here. It's even more interesting when you dig into it a little bit and you look at it from the perspective of somebody who has a lot of experience in the courts. Yeah. No right-thinking attorney that I know would let their client, in the middle of a negotiation for a settlement, go and testify before the city council on why they should get that money. Because their subject, if there was anybody there with any chutzpah, would have cross-examined her, right, you know, and maybe gotten something derogatory. So that tells me they had no fear of the settlement. They knew it was going to go through. And you're right.
Right, exactly.
But let's talk. One of the things we haven't touched on so far is, what about the role of the media? You know,
I'm an expert.
You know, people are, and you know who the usual suspects are. They're quick to write this story, that story. But why don't you start connecting the dots? Who are these law firms that are getting these deals that are just agreed to? You know, they're selling out of court. They're not going to court. It's not like she got $280,000.
Right. No jury said,
It was a done deal. And that's why she testified before the city council.
For journalists are like cops in this way. You're in murky waters at the start.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to keep your soul clean. And we're in the middle of Lent. And you're trying to keep your soul as clean as you can, but you're in the muddy water.
Right.
And all of a sudden you see one of your colleagues again writing the same story again about the issue is the forceful cops. They deserve to be punished. Let's have a story. Let's have an outrage. And then the law firm picks it up and they run the lawsuit, and then that becomes part of the money machine. And if you're a journalist who's an eye on the ball, you're like, okay, this guy who wrote this, that person's bent a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like Joe DiLeonardi telling me that he at certain homicides, he would see like a guy who he thought was the button man at the homicide. He was wearing a police badge. And he's like, what am I supposed to do with this? And it's the same type of thing. We are, our profession the journalism profession is bent. And it's Jeff, I hate to tell you this, but I think people don't have faith in us anymore.
Oh, well, yeah. I think
they have more faith in the Chicago Police Department than in the Chicago journalists.
I'm not sure how to respond to that part of it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there's certainly, I mean, if anybody is new here, this is kind of a tome of what we talk about often, is that, you know, there's corporatized media just fails everybody. And it's not about information or safety or freedom or any of that democracy stuff. It's about dollars and cents and lowest common denominator.
One thing I do want to ask both of you, but particularly Gene, because he was the chief of detectives. This is a little delicate, but there was a chief of detectives that I was familiar with, and I used to write about him often. And people made him a hero in my business. The journalists made him a hero. These were the same type of journalists I'm talking about. They made this guy a hero, and he was really working for Joey Lombardo and for the outfit in Chicago. His name was William Hanhart. And I don't think that the police department ever truly recovered from that. What do you think, Gene?
It cast a shadow. It definitely did. He's been gone for 20 years. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes you have the person who's the root of the problem, and then you have their group, their followers, sure, the second and third yeah, tier people.
Right.
They're gone now. There's bigger issues. And, you know, it's, you know, as long as there's been man, there's been corruption. You know, it's an age old question. Right. I think if either of us had the answer to that question, all due respect, John, we wouldn't be sitting here talking with you.
You're probably right. You're probably right. But gee, it's been great talking to you. John, before Eugene, we let you go, and I wanted to clarify too, the restaurant you were talking about, because we got a little restaurant thing going on the podcast. I don't know if food is kind of our second beat, if you will.
Yeah.
What was the name of that restaurant that you said you used to go to? It reminded you of seeing the cops and the firefighters, and kind of was like quintessential Chicago for you.
It was a place called Iola's, IOLA'S, within like the 9,000 block of South Cottage Grove, west side of the street.
Mm-hmm.
We're going back ancient history here.
Sure, sure, sure.
But you might as well go to Lamex, because Lamex is my cousin's uncle's place, and that's gone too.
Well, mm-hmm. It may be gone, but I've forgotten. What was the dish that comes to mind when you're sitting there thinking, I mean, what are you eating? What are you
at Iola's?
Yeah, what was it?
The big treat back in the day was, if you were a good kid at school or did something good around the house, on Friday night there was a hot fudge sundae there.
Nice. Whoa. Nice. All right. There you go. Stepping out.
What about now, Gene? Where do cops go now for a good meal besides Kerrigan's? Where can you go?
You know, Connie's is one place. Riccobenny's, another place. Just trying to think of some of the other places that they, you know, really not sure.
Yeah, where were you? What district did you run?
Commander of the 9th District, Deering.
Oh, Deering, yeah. Deering.
Your Honor.
Never forget, yeah. I remember Father Brandt. What's his name? Father
Brandt. Brandt.
Yes. Yeah. How's he doing? Yeah, he was
excellent.
A good guy.
Excellent.
I remember he called me up and he said, what did he? He was all pissed off because I was writing something about one of his parishioners. And he's like, even Jesus had his problems with the law. I'm like, okay. Okay, Father. Sorry. St. Patrick's Day. What can I do?
All right. What are you going to do? Well, Gene, it's been great to have you. Thanks for joining us, Chicago Way. You should take John up on that offer. You get a lot of eyes on what you rewrite. I'd love to see what you put out there. But people want to find you. I mean, I see on Twitter a lot. Where do you usually send up?
I'm on X or Twitter, depending on how you look at it, your age and your social group. Chief Roy.
At Chief Roy.
Yeah.
Okay. Chief of Detectives, Gene Roy. Thanks for joining us on the Chicago Way podcast. We got to talk about what we can do these police officers aren't being paid, but now the city wants 3% give back. We'll come back. Maybe Gene can write a good column for me on that. We'll wait and see how they, I don't know how you can solve the problems of the city when you don't, when you can't pay the coppers to even work.
Well, the firemen have been without a contract for 3 years now.
Yeah.
And that's amazing, because the fire union is 180 degrees different than the police union, where FOP, cat and Zara, are just cat and dog with City Hall. The firefighters union is lapdogs for City Hall. And this is the way that City Hall is you know, repaid them. They're driving around. They don't have any spare trucks. They're driving around in rigs that are, you know, 15, 20 years old.
You're going to drive. Well, a good friend of mine is Pat Fitzmorris. I used to call him pain in the ass.
The paramedic Pat chief, yeah.
You know, paramedic, West Side paramedic
yes.
chief.
Yep.
And I'm wondering, he remember the promises that they've always been given about ambulances, and we'll get more ambulances, and they never do. And these guys are short-sticking it through 20 years now. 25, 30 years.
You know, you talk about this, the stress and the trauma on cops.
Yeah.
I personally think, I'm not going to take away from my brothers and sisters in law enforcement, right. but the CFD paramedics have a much more concentrated dose of trauma and stress from the violent cases they respond to every day. Don't forget, they're on 24 hours a day. So if you have a cop that handles one or two murders in a week, that's a lot. But that those paramedics could have seen three or four in the same period of time.
You wonder why they have decks and back porches. That's for the paramedics and the police officers and everyone else who deals with this mayhem to stand out there in the middle of the night, and their wives are asking them, hey, honey, what's wrong with you? And he's like, oh, I'm okay. That's all right. I'm good. I'm coming in. Just one more smoke.
Because we're tough guys. We can't share anything. We have to carry the burden. That's the mentality. You know, I talked about that military mentality earlier.
Yeah.
That's gone in terms of supervision and structure and all that. But this the same, keep it to yourself, button up, you're a kid, suck it up, buttercup. The individual cops and firefighters are still that way, especially the firefighters.
Gene Roy, I hope you come back and talk to us again. It's been a pleasure to have you on the Chicago Way. Thanks for joining
us. My pleasure, John. Thanks, take care.
For Gene Roy, former chief of detectives, Chicago Police. For Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio. My friend and soon-to-be physics teacher. And for me, John Cass, editor-in-chief of johncassnews.com. Only $50 a year. You can read stuff like Gene Roy will soon write. If you want a good cup of common sense. Join us again next time, won't you? For the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.